Okay. Good afternoon, sir.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Can we meet you?
Well, my name is Gbemisola Adeoti. I'm a professor of literature in English in the English department of Obafemi Awolowo University. My areas of interest will include dramatic literature, literary history, poetry, traditions, popular culture, and literary history. Yeah.
Yes, okay. We are going to be having this conversation in the capacity that you've highlighted. But I want to add another one, because I recall that there was a time that you were in a performance of my home play that won the Nantap Award. That's about 16 or so.
Yeah, 2003. Years
ago.
Yes.
So I also want you to speak in that light as an actor,
yeah,
stage director, and
yes,
so on and so
yes.
forth. Now, this project is about, it's titled Reimagination of Tragedy in Africa and the Global South, RETAX. It's a research project being led by Professor Mark Flashman, the director of the Center for Theater, Dance and Performance Studies, University of Cape Town in South Africa, and
okay.
It's sponsored by the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation.
Okay.
Now, the concept that we're looking at is how tragedy has been reimagined since 1960 or thereabout up until now, especially Greek tragedy, and in relation to specific contemporary realities into which those adaptations have been set, and the broader area of how the work actually speak to the environment where it is set, and perhaps elsewhere, both in Africa
and outside
in the global south. So, sir, let's take it from this point, maybe so that we can have a kind of a line for it. How do we see tragedy, and then what is tragic? Maybe we can look at those two concepts.
Tragedy, from its classical viewpoint, is that kind of play that tries to assert the dignity of man, even in the face of adversity. And it tries to humble man, let man remember that at the end of the day, he's essentially a human being, and that this world does not end in itself, that there's an attachment between the current world and that world out there that we don't actually see, but that world has some influence over human affairs. And when we have that understanding, there's a limit to which we can misbehave, which can be immoral, or we can elevate ourselves to the level of the gods and then look down on every other human being. So it, for me, tragedy tries to really humanize human beings at the end of the day, because there's that constant reminder of the intersection between the world of the living and then the world out there that may be referred to as the world of the supernatural, gods, divinities, you know, ancestors, and so on and so forth. So that's from the classical viewpoint, which is still sustained up till now. The only difference is that the influence of the supernatural is reduced, so that what we have is man confronting his own errors, excesses, and but still in the same direction, he's still reminded that he's a human being within this world, and there's a limit to which he has to go, especially when he's confronted with the social, the society, the individual versus the society. There's a limit to which he can go, and tragedy in that sense tries to remind man of that fact constantly.
So what is now the tragic? How do we say something is tragic? Oh. I mean, something happens, this is tragic.
Tragic, well, the tragic will come from a sense of being unfortunate or a difference between expectation and outcome, especially in a manner that is that now calls for some sadness, you know, anxiety, disappointment, some death. Of course, death will have to be there. I mean, losing of lives, which ordinarily, you know, will have loved to be around. So, I mean, it can mean reversal of fortune. Okay? And reversal of fortune does not mean that the person must essentially be a great person, a king, a warlord, and all that. It could be ordinary human being, but that that ordinary human being is not having it rosy in the way and manner that is expected, and the thing continues until the cessation of that person's existence.
Thank you very much. So that, now, let's now bring it into the theatrical world. It's very good. You mentioned the classical definition of tragedy. So now we're looking at reimagination of classical tragedies. We have so many of them here. Most
adaptations.
Olarotimi is The Gods Are Not to Blame. Femi Oshofison's Degoni. That's Antigone. Women of Owu. Trojan Women. And then he has other ones apart from the Greek. We also have adaptation of Shakespeare's tragedies, Yerima's Othello, adaptation of Othello,
Hamlet.
Say we were so Hamlet by Oshofison and so on. Now we look at it. First, we begin to look at from your own experience as a teacher. You've taught some of these texts, you have analyzed them, you've seen them in performance.
And also acted.
And acted in some of them. In a way, how do we account for the stimulation for this adaptation in terms of what we've seen of those texts? How do we account for what inspired them?
Well, from my own research, because I published a monograph on aesthetics of adaptation in contemporary Nigerian drama.
Yes.
Where I looked at some of these plays. And from my research, I discovered that these playwrights took on those classical models with a view to addressing contemporary political situations in their country.
In their own country.
In their own country. Of course, you can extend it to Africa. Because just like the Greek heroes who at a point, you know, they realize their ambition and then they turn down to look at other mortals and they come to harm. You have a situation where when we got independence, those who took over, they just inherited the political structure that the colonialists left behind. So the situation of the oppressor, okay, the situation of the oppressor and the oppressed still continued. In fact, it became worse by the mid-60s when we were having military coups. And those that were imagined were military dictators. So, with that kind of a situation, I mean, there's so much misgovernance. The economy was not doing well. There was, in fact, some countries, they had to go to war. There was crisis of development and crisis of governance in many parts of Africa. So some of these playwrights then reached out to those models to create to create situations that will give them an ample opportunity to re-examine their own society, make political statements, but using those Greek models or borrowing from those Greek texts. If you look at the Bacchae of Euripides by Soyinka, you know that political dictatorship was the concern of Soyinka at that period. It was done in the 70s, and by that time we were already saddled with Idi Amin of Uganda, Mobutu Sese Seko of Zaire, Even our own Gowan was already there. So the man had such opportunity, I mean, such models to borrow from. But apart from that, the Territes also, I mean, just as they were indebted to classical European playwriting in the course of their education, they were also borrowing from their indigenous cultures. And so part of it is to sometimes bring up the traditional elements of African performances from their own culture to create plays that will entertain. And if you agree with me, tragedy has, as part of its critical element, music, spectacle, which are defining elements of our own performances too. So those performing those tragedies also enable them to explore the traditional resources, the traditional theatrical resources of their own people, because they will bring in dance, songs, acrobatic displays, and so on and so forth. And so watching them, yes, you feel sad, but then you still feel entertained.
Okay, so let's look at some of these elements that you've been able to tease out about African theater, which the adapters also make use of. And let's link them, I mean, in relation to maybe one or two of the performances of these tragic plays that we have seen. Maybe if anyone comes to mind,
okay,
we can talk about that.
Yeah.
Maybe Ochafisor's Women of Obu, for instance.
Let's talk about Death and the King's Husband, which
I watched
more recently.
Shoyinka's Death and the King's
Husband. Yes.
Okay. Of course, while that is not an adaptation of the Greek tragedy.
Oh, okay, okay.
We can talk about it. Shoyinka also adapted history. Because if you look at it, Shoyinka took the materials from specific historical events, twisted it, and then tried to bring all of this. And that play is even really important, because if you look at it, it's more like a kind of a defining play for generation of writers that came after him, like Olarotimi and Osofisan.
Mm-hmm.
So let's look at all of those four. Then we can relate them to specific examples of Greek tragedies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, from the director's or the playwright's note.
Yes.
Yeah. Shoyinka said categorically that what he's out to do in that play is to celebrate the concept of transition among the Yoruba people, and that it is not just about the West versus the rest of us, or the colonialists versus the colonized. No, that is out to celebrate the concept of transition among the Yoruba people. And the word transition, yes, people will sorrow because there is a departure, but at the same time, it is an introduction to another level of existence. So that in the Yoruba world, there is no break in existence. You just move from one realm of existence to another. And the Yoruba celebrate that transition, or that moment of transition, with music, with poetry, with rite, or what we call ritual. And these are, you know, all elements that the Greeks too, they try to emphasize in their own tragedy. For instance, if from the beginning of the play, you are launched into riddles, poetry, metaphor, in the exchange between the Eleshinoba and Olonweyo, where he's trying to prepare us for the role that Eleshin is to take at the end of the day, which is to go with their laughing. So Eleshin is bracing himself up in the not I bed riddle to say that when the time comes for him to take the heroic plunge to the other realm, he's not going to be like the not I bed, where people shirk their responsibilities when confronted with danger. So using different symbols, riddles, and all that, it prepares us for that. But it's laid with drums, dance, and so on into the market square. Then Yes, the celebration of marriage, but the more important one is that part that I think that takes place in scene 3, where there's an exchange between Elisha laughing and Olonweyo. Elisha laughing, can you hear my voice? Faintly, faintly. The thing goes on for about 10-15 minutes, where Olonweyo simulates Alaafin calling on the husband that if he is not going to come or if there's something disturbing him, he should make other preparations for the horse to come and so on and so forth. And shortly after that, I mean, it's at that moment that the colonial messengers, when they pounce on him and arrest him. But that is the moment of tragedy. Because
the was stopped.
Exactly. And so every other thing that happens thereafter is just anticlimax. The man now loses his freedom, loses his self-esteem, his social rating, and at the end of the day, he loses his son. And so he has to go along with that.
So how did you see this in performance, the specific performance that you saw?
Yeah.
With this was, how was it realized?
All realized in the sense that, one, the actors chosen were quite fantastic. I still remember Kola Oyewo playing Eleshin, and Tuji Ojeyemi, who is a chanter, a dancer, playing Olonweyo, and then the rich costumes, you know, of the Sonyo, Alari, all those kinds of old Yoruba traditional attires they put on, and the drummers, they were also masters of it. Then they introduce flute that creates this somber, reflective atmosphere during that period.
Now let's talk about the performance of either a woman of or Antigone that you saw.
Yes,
maybe live in here or something. What was really that thing that you cannot forget about the performance in terms of his staging?
Well, I think it also relates to the attempt to situate the play squarely within Yoruba tradition, Yoruba culture, and then Yoruba performance culture. Music, dance, in fact, there are so many of them. So many dances, so many songs, you know, brought to bear there. I think that one was quite fascinating.
No, if you say that, so are we saying, he's taking it from what you said earlier about the Greek and then the Yoruba song, are we saying that tragedy is culture specific?
Well, I think it is the play. It is each play that will be culture specific, but the overriding idea of tragedy is universal. Yes, it's universal, the idea of tragedy. But the universality does not mean that it is the classical one that is the norm. No, it is in that regard that you can say, well, there will be some cultural specificity. If we say the idea of tragedy is, you know, a betrayal of expectation or misfortune, a sense of misfortune and all that, there is no society that does not erect a sense of achievement, an idea of greatness, and then falling below that expectation. So to that extent, it will be universal. But what constitutes greatness? What do you define as achievement or realization in one society may be different from another society, and it is in that regard that relativism coming from there.
Many years, let's say about 20 or so years ago, this place we are in, I'm not talking about the university environment, I'm talking about the whole state, the community, Ife, was in a very serious battle with his neighbor.
I think
the war raged on for many years.
Yeah.
Ochofison also wrote Women of Umu, setting Trojan women in the context of the Umu war, the Allied forces, and at some point in time, Ochofison was also here. Is it possible for us to begin to look at the Ife Modakeke war as exemplary of the kind of what Ochofison was trying to relate to? Ochofison didn't see the women of Umu. I mean, the Owu war. He read about it, but he witnessed Ife Modakeke war. Should we kind of see some kind of similarities
in that
sense of tragedy?
Well, I think it goes beyond Ife Modakeke war. I mean, it may serve as some inspiration, but all around there are so many, so many crises. Before Ife and Modakeke, you have a Ofairinle crisis that have been on for decades, for generations. It's there. Okay? Still within the same country, you have the Umuleri, Aguleri people, you have the Jukun and the Thieves. Okay?
In the north. In the east.
They are just neighbors. Umuleri, Aguleri, in the east. So I don't think it's the just the Ife Modakeke war. It's within the context of brothers, neighbors, visiting inhumanity against each other, which is what you find in the Trojan War, and which it tries to, which happened in the Owu War, the Kiriji War, the Jalumi War, the Adubi War, and so on and so forth in Yoruba land.
So, what it means is that a player like Women of Owu will continue to be relevant because wars, skirmishes, violence has kind of become a kind of a contemporary reality.
Yes, in fact, that is why the plays will continue to be relevant. I mean, the classical plays. In fact, take any play written from the classical era to date. There is no way you won't find relevance outside the context of the time or outside the context of the culture that produced it, because tragedy affirms one humanity. That's the point I made about universality at the earlier stage. So if we're talking about humanity, there are so many things that bind us together, regardless of what time we exist and in which space we inhabit. So, to that extent, the tragedies will continue to be relevant because we're essentially human beings. The frailties that you find displayed in classical plays, you still find people displaying them: greed, pride, anger, needless superiority complex, lust. They're all human frailties. And they are not restricted to the whites alone, because these plays were about Europeans. You also find them in among the blacks. You find them among the Asians. So to that extent, tragedy will this particular play will still continue to be relevant, so long as we don't see ourselves as our brother's keepers. We see ourselves as adversaries.
So considering the fact that most adapters usually choose to work on tragedies, does that suggest that does that suggest that tragedy sells more in the theater than comedy?
Well, I wouldn't subscribe to that, because they also adapt comedies too. I don't know. I can't account for that. That maybe tragedy sells more. I'm not sure. But, well, perhaps because the issues are so serious, the issue that they are dealing with, they are serious issues, maybe that's why they choose the relevant dramatic mode to use, which is tragedy. But at the same time, at least I've witnessed a couple of adaptation of comedies, like Love's Unlike Leading by Osovison. It's an adaptation of Merchant of Venice by Shakespeare. I know that Wade Luba adapted a Scalping the Scoundrel by Molière, which he called Subaru the Scoundrel. And so different adaptation of Lysistrata, I've watched them. So
Honorati means The Gods Are Not To Blame is one of the most popular of these.
One of the earliest.
One of the earliest.
Yeah.
And I doubt if any Nigerian actor had not worked on it or not. In one way or the other, because it's more like. Well, if you look at the player, after many years, wrote him in an interview, said the play addresses the Nigerian civil war. Do you also subscribe to that in terms of the dramaturgy?
Well, since he was a playwright, I mean, he may have his reason to have said that within the context. Yes, I've taught it, but I've always looked beyond the civil war.
Okay. Because into what?
The play itself, even when you don't have any background knowledge about, you know, what motivated the playwright, you see a fantastic play for the theater. The way it's, you know, produced, realized, with all the elements of, you know, indigenous performances, chants, songs, invocations, and so on and so forth. Even characterization, and then representation of human frailty, anger, and so on and so forth. So the play is, relevant in that respect. But beyond civil war, identity has always been a source of problem for man. Who are we? Where are we from? And where I come from, I'm different from these other people. And there's a tendency to always want to define self against the other in terms of superiority.
You see, just recently, where this project is taking place in South Africa, there was another round of xenophobic attack. You know, this is part of, irrespective of the name we give to, whether we call it racism,
xenophobia.
I think it is always the same question of trying to define oneself in relation to
other. Yes.
So you think Olarity means the gods are not to blame actually really dramatizes that very well.
Yes.
The danger in it.
Yes, there is a danger in it. In fact, there is this salient line by Odewale himself when, I think
that's
it's
the Oedipus character.
Oedipus character, when Aderoko is trying to blame the gods and say, no, do not blame the gods. That he also has his share of the blame, especially his own anger. And then he alludes to his confrontation with
his
the
father.
Man that happened to be his father. That the man insulted his tribe, you know, call him from the bush tribe of Ijeku. And in anger, he had to deal the man to show that he is not inferior in any way. So identity is a very critical issue, and it has generated so much tragedy, so much misfortune. Is it the white versus the Asians, or the white against the blacks, even among the blacks,
South Africans
and then the rest of other nationals, you know. So it's the so that is a universal element, and Olarotimi explores it. So the civil war is just a faint echo. It's just a faint echo. Even if if you don't have the opportunity of reading Olarotimi's interview or clarification, it wouldn't have affected anything in your interpretation of the play. The Gods Are Not to Blame.
Now, when we look at it, both Osofison and Olarantibu, and then Soyinka in his battalion, Rupides, you have this element, the Yoruba element of the presence, the huge presence of the gold. In Soyinka's Bakai, for instance, you have this, of course, Soyinka's interaction with Ogun. Rotimi also, there's that atmosphere of Ogun, even in the Girls Are Not to Blame that we talk about. Although Osofison never mentioned that, but Ogun is identified with war, carnage, that begins the women of Ogun. So are we saying that in spite of development, civilization, and contact with the so-called outside world, and then the way we've imbibed foreign religions, Christianity and Islam, these plays, are they suggesting that Africans are still very much tied to the past of their race in terms of the belief in those
I think whether we like it or not, you know, the gods are they are part of our existence then and now. And if the Greeks, because the motivation, the model of those plays, they come from the Greeks. And you see the role of Dionysus, Apollo, Zeus, and so Pentheus, in those original texts. So, hello.
Okay.
So, you answer.
Yes, we are looking at the Nigerian
of the gods. Essentially, as I said, the Africans still believe in the connection between this world and the world out there. Though they can't see the content, but it's still real. Okay? There is no human being who exists alone. He has a tie with the outside world. So that is there. And I don't think, no matter how much the scientific invention or how much you preach or teach people to hate their past, they will still be there. Okay? Even when you teach them to hate their past, what you are giving in place is another supernaturalism. Muhammad, Jesus. They are in the, if you want to use the word, they were human beings who became gods. Just like these other gods were human beings who later became
deified
one way or the other. So, regardless of that imperialism, that European or Arabian imperialism, people will still remember who they are, where they are from. And I think that informs the use of those gods. But beyond that, there are many things about those gods that are inspiring to the writer. They are like muses to the writer. Especially when you read their myth while they were alive. Ogun was creative, was chaotic, courageous, in spite of, the fact that he also has negative and destructive elements. And that is what the world is. Tibitire, ladaliae. Aha. So, if everything is good and proceeding on the same plane, it won't be nice. And if everything is going on the plane of the tragic, it won't be nice. So you need a balance of the two. And the Yoruba pantheon represents, a nice blend of those two possibilities. So they will continue to be relevant, not only to the writer, but also even to the audience who will appreciate them.
But if you look at these plays that we talk about, Bakai of Euripides,
Women
of Ogun, Tegoni, the Girls Are Not to Blame. There is the dramatization of the people's propensity for violence, for brutality. Does that say something about the world that we live in a way, if you look at it?
Well, because you don't forget that they were modeled after some Greek plays. So, to that extent, you can also say the Europeans were violent. And they continue to be violent if you look at their history. You remember 100 Years' War between the English and the French. Even in English royalty, the 30-year War of the Roses has been there. The story of Julius Caesar, you know, I mean, it's about war. What of the French Revolution, Napoleon? What of the World War? The Second World War is about war, and there is among Europeans who are killing themselves. So, if you're talking about violence, they are predisposed to it, just like any other race. So, blacks don't have monopoly of violence, and I don't think they came to chaos out of violence. They also had history of dog biting dog. So to that extent, I will agree with you that there was disposition to violence. But it's not because it represents the blacks as being violent. They are coming from a background because those writers adapted from a particular work which also ministered or addressed the human problem at a particular point in history.
But from you have taught the play, you acted in some, you've seen the performance. And let's look at performances in a specific sense. Do you think the audience responded more to the tragedy than the way comedy was staged? Did you think the audience responded more to tragic plays?
Well, since you can only do that if you administer questionnaire. But
based on the audience,
okay,
the one that you saw, and
yes,
you interacted with the performance that you saw, can you?
No, I'm not going to compare because each play elicited its own emotion, and people, you know, gave. In comedy, they will laugh. Okay, in tragedy, especially the tragic moments, you see people crying. Okay, I've watched Kurumi, and even women of, you know, people at a particular point in time, you know, they will shed tears. Although in between, there will be some comic relief when people will laugh. But if you want to take it tragedy, comedy, it will be difficult to compare because each player has his own emotion that it elicits.
Yeah, some people believe that even those elements of comedy that we infuse in tragedy do not really necessarily have a place. You think comedy has a way of trivializing the issue?
No, it's not trivializing. It's to bring down the accumulated negative feelings, anxiety that tragedy has a tendency to generate from the beginning. So you definitely need a moment to draw, you know, the thing down a bit, even though it will proceed. But how is it going to be played that it will not distract will depend on each playwright. Okay? It will depend on each playwright. If you take Oborawen Ogbaisi, for instance,
yes,
which is historical, there is the character of the Oba's messenger, Uzazapo. That man is funny. I mean, he's a clown. But that clowning, the way it's done, does not distract from the serious element of the tragedy. Rather, you know, when everything seems to be going wrong and wrong, you know, it brings down the tempo. So, for me, it's still necessary. It's necessary.
Prof, thank you so very much for granting this interview. I really appreciate it.